And several months ago when I created the sermon, I had no idea that my grandson was going to be here. When we talked about Joshua's life, what can we learn? A lesson on leadership and discipleship. Next week, we're going to talk about Joseph and Jesus. So that's what we're going to do next week. So today is March 20th of 2010, and we're going to talk about the life of Joshua. For those of us who are reading the Bible through by the Gideon's plan of reading, you started reading Joshua this morning, chapter 1. And as I read through chapter 2 this morning, I could remember being a young man in the Sunday school class at a Lutheran church. And the boys in Sunday school always like Joshua chapter 2. You know, and that would be one of the few times that we would volunteer to read. You know, because if you pronounce the name of that town that they go just right, you can kind of sound it out. You know, and then the whole story of two soldiers going to a town and they go to Rahab's house and they're just there for a short time, and the questions that we would ask our Sunday school teachers about that, trying to embarrass our Sunday school teachers as they explained to us, well, what's that all about? You know, but we had a whole lot of fun with that. I hope you're reading that for a different content than when I was a devious young man. Joshua's life, what can we learn? When you read the Bible, do you think, I'm supposed to think about how this relates to me? Do you do that? When you're reading through Joshua, is it, oh, okay, it's time to read the Bible. Okay, okay, Joshua's doing this. Oh, okay, well, they're going to cross the Red Sea. Oh, yeah. But do you actually think about this stuff as how does that relate to me? Do you think I could learn from their mistakes and strengths? I thought several times if I ever wrote a book, it would be how to learn from my mistakes because I made so many of them. If you would just learn and not do the ones that I did, you'd be way ahead. But when you read the Bible, do you learn from what they say? What happened in their lives? Whether it's the strong points or the weak points, today I'm going to look at his strong points. In Deuteronomy 32, 45 through 47, it says this, "Then Moses finished reciting all these words to them and said, 'Take to heart all the words I have solemnly declared to you this day, so that you may command your children to obey carefully all the words of this law. They are not idle words for you. They are your life.'" Moses is getting ready to go up onto the mountain alone with God, look at the promised land, and then die, and God's going to bury him. And he one more time goes through the books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, that he had written, and reads them to the people and challenges them to teach this stuff to your kids, to pay attention. Don't just read the Bible like you're scanning the sports page, but read it for your life. So here's my outline. First of all, Joshua was discipled. He was submissive. He was obedient. He was faithful. And he was successful. And most people want to get to point five without being integrated and involved in 4, 3, 2, 1. But they want to have success in life, but are unwilling to learn from the Scriptures the things that need to happen beforehand. So let's take a look at that. He was discipled. So who discipled Joshua? Moses. You got it right. That's your first blank on the back of your bulletin. Moses discipled Joshua. Now why did he do that? To replace himself. And really the intent of writing this whole message is this first point on reproductive discipleship. That's what stirred me, and I wanted to write this message. So in Numbers 27, 18 and 19, "So the Lord said to Moses, 'Take Joshua, son of Nun, the man in whom it is the Spirit, and lay your hands on him. Have him stand before Eleazar, the priest, and the entire assembly. Commission him in their presence.'" So there was this formal, peaceful transition of power from Moses to Joshua. Moses says, I'm going to go up on the mountain. I'm going to die. You're never going to see me anymore. I'm laying my hands on Joshua. He's the one I am commissioning to be your leader when I leave. There is this peaceful transition of power that takes place, and that's really critical for those of us who are in the kingdom. So Moses discipled Joshua. Now, what did Moses do to disciple Joshua to replace himself? Be on your outline says, go is your first blank with me. Watch is your second blank. Watch what I do and then do what I do. That's how Moses discipled Joshua. Go with me, watch what I do, and then do what I do. When Moses went up on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights and didn't eat and didn't drink and was up there with God, who was the only one that went with him? Joshua. After he smashed the tablets and he went up again, do you remember who carried the tablets up for him a second time? Joshua. Went up there with him, and God inscribed on those tablets that he had made. Joshua went with them. When Moses went to the tabernacle to meet with God, Joshua went right along with him. So, who did Jesus disciple? Jesus discipled the 12. Now, how did he do that? See, be above. Jesus took the disciples, go with me, watch what I do, and then you do what I do. And there's even points in time where he took them and sent them out two by two, sent the 70 out, gave them power to do the things that he did. And they came back and they said, this is awesome. We're healing the sick. We're kicking demons out of people's lives. This is incredible. And that's how Moses discipled Joshua, and that's how Jesus discipled the 12 disciples. Now then, who does the Bible record that Joshua discipled to replace himself? There isn't a blank. Although he was discipled, when he leaves, there, when you read Joshua, you'll discover that he doesn't really disciple someone to replace himself. Who does the Bible record that the 12 disciples discipled to replace themselves? See, now when you look at Peter, you don't see it. But when you look at Paul, who wasn't really one of the 12, he's a later apostle. Now, Paul does a really nice job, Barnabas and Timothy and so forth. But when you look at the 12, somehow Joshua and the 12 missed a very important thing. Now, I'm sure they were integrated and involved with people, and John, at the end of his life, takes Polycarp and spends some very important time with him, and he becomes a very prominent leader. But for the most part, they didn't do what was done to them. So, who are you discipling to replace yourself in the kingdom's work? Who's going to be the one who replaces you when you leave? All of us, like Clarence, are going to die. Who is it that you're discipling so that when you die, there's not a void? Who's your Moses? Who's your Joshua? Are you keeping the chain going? So, here's the bottom line. I am disciple someone to replace me in the work of God's kingdom. Now, historically, when I was involved with Victorious Christian Living, I had that as part of my life pattern. I discipled men so that if something happened to me, the work goes on even though I'm not there. Eric Carlson came and shared with you for a number of weeks while I was in treatment in Texas. I discipled Eric to replace me. But then after I did that for a while, for reasons I can't explain to you, I stopped doing it. And Eric didn't pick it up. So subsequently, when he wants to step down from leading the VCL ministry in Rock Falls, there's nobody to replace him. Who are you discipling to replace you in the kingdom? If you look at the generation before us, there was a phenomenon that happened with these large evangelistic meetings that took place that were wonderful, but they were a new deal. And it didn't work out like Jesus said in Matthew, where you meet somebody, you introduce them to the Lord, you teach them to obey all that's commanded, you baptize them, you disciple them in the faith. The culture of Christianity changed. And all of a sudden we have all of these people born again at these massive events, and it's wonderful. They're all coming into the kingdom. But there's not a Moses saying, come live with me, walk with me, learn from me, experience my life with me. Discipleship went by the wayside. And so now you and I live in a cultural Christian void of discipleship. So as our grandfathers in the faith die off, what was biblically done years ago is not being done. And you and I need to take up the torch. We need to be discipling people. We need to be multiplying ourselves. That was the point of writing the whole sermon. The rest of it is just kind of what happened after I got to point number one. So, how do you do that? See B above. You invite somebody to go with you, to do what you do, to be a part of your life. You invite somebody into relationship with you. And they learn from you, and honestly, you'll learn from them as well. But that's how you do it. It's not just discipling your children and your grandchildren. It's discipling others to replace you in God's kingdom. So, here's point number two. Joshua was submissive. Joshua was a brilliant military leader and a strong spiritual influence. A, the key to his success, key is your blank, was his submission to God. Because he was submissive to God, that was the key to his success. It all starts with submitting to God and his way. So, B on point number two is Moses modeled. Modeled is your second blank. This for Joshua. He said, go with me, watch what I do. This is how you do it. See how I talk to God like a friend? See how we have this dialogue going back and forth? That's how you're supposed to talk to God, with deep respect and awe. But you talk to him and make deals with him at times. And he modeled this submission to him. But submission doesn't mean you just keep your mouth shut. When God was going to wipe out the whole Jewish nation and make a new nation from Moses, Moses said, well, God, let's just think about this for a minute. Now, you just brought all these people out of Egypt, and everybody's watching what you're doing. If you bring them out into the desert, now you kill them all, how are you going to look? Why don't we think of a better idea? God says, okay, I won't kill them all at once. I'll kill them all normally, one at a time, over 40 years. Right? But Moses oftentimes did this. Abraham did that. He's sitting on top of the hill and two angels of Jesus come walking up the hill and he says, hey, you guys got time to stop and cool off and have something to eat and something to drink with me? And they do, and the two angels go down to Sodom and Gomorrah, and Abraham's standing there talking to Jesus, and Jesus says, well, should I keep from Abraham what I'm going to do? I'm going to destroy this city. And Abraham says, well, listen, let's just talk about this. Can we make a good Jewish deal? How about if we find 50 righteous people in there? Will you destroy everybody and the 50? And Jesus says, nope, for 50 I won't do. Well, don't get mad at me, but what if there's 5 less? What if there's only 45? Typical Jewish deal, right? Well, what about 40? It finally gets to the bottom line. God says, that's it. For that many, I'll save the city. And they couldn't find that many righteous people. Lot and his wife and two daughters were all that survived. But Moses modeled that for Joshua. You model your life of prayer, your life of Bible study, your interaction with God, your life with your wife and children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren. You're the one who models that, and you don't ever stop. You don't go into discipleship submissive retirement. You continue to do this for your life. So, did Jesus model his submission for the disciples for us? Are we modeling it to those who are watching us? Are you and I modeling submission? Now, here's the effects of the 1 Peter Bible study in chapter 2, 13, and 14. Submit yourselves to the Lord's sake to how many? Every authority. Is there any authority not covered in every authority instituted among men, whether it be a king, a supreme authority, a governor, who are set to punish those who do wrong or commend those who do right? Here's the next one, 18. Slaves. What is he talking about here? This is our work environment. Those of us who work for a living, I mean, we're slaves. If you don't work, you don't make money, right? Slaves, submit yourselves to your masters with all respect, not only the ones who are good and considerate, but also the ones who are harsh. Wives, in the same way, be submissive to your husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by your behavior. They will see the purity and the reverence in your lives. Husbands, you don't get off. In the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect as a weaker partner and heirs with you in the gracious gift of life, so that nothing will hinder your prayers. Now, it's noticeable, guys, that this is the only one with the catch-22 on the bottom of it. So that. Nobody else gets that. You and I get this. You want to live with your wives in such a way that it doesn't interfere with your prayers. So, being crabby, inconsiderate, demeaning, it's going to mess up your prayers. So, Joshua was discipled, he was submissive, and he was obedient. A, when God spoke, Joshua listened and obeyed. Listened and obeyed are your blanks for A. Joshua would listen to God, and then he would obey him. Here's what it says in Joshua 23:11. Joshua said to all the people, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. So be very careful and love the Lord your God and obey all his commands." So he's saying, love God, listen to God, obey God. So not only did Joshua listen and obey, but B, he was committed, is your blank for B. Committed to obey God. He decided ahead of time, I will obey what God says. When you're in the military, they do a really good job of discipling you and teaching you that you don't question the commands. You don't question, well, why am I supposed to do this? What's the big picture? Children do this with their parents sometimes. Well, why do I have to listen and obey that? What's the point? The point is, you obey the first time in your military, as children, as parents, as submitted to God. You decide you're going to do that right up front. And then everything works out well. Here's what it says in Joshua 24. Now fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness. But if serving the Lord seems unreasonable to you, then choose for yourselves today who you will serve, whether the gods your fathers served in the beyond the river or the gods, the Amorites, in whose land you are living. Here's Joshua's bottom line. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. He decided ahead of time. As for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. 30 years ago, when I was a new Christian, I was introduced to this concept that I could decide for me, my wife, and my two young children, that this is what we're going to do. We're going to serve the Lord. It's not an option. This is what my house does. And it had an impact on my wife, on my children. Husbands, you do the same thing. Wives, you do the same thing. You decide ahead of time you are going to serve the Lord. You're going to listen to what he says, and you're going to obey what he does. And you commit to that before it starts. Before the orders ever come down, you decide that's what you're going to do. You decide you're going to be obedient. So number four is, he was faithful. A, faith begins with believing God can be trusted. Trusted is your blank. You believe God can be trusted, and that's the start of faith. Because think about it. Anything that you're going to put faith in, you got to trust it. I was cutting a hole in the floor underneath of the sanctuary here to run the vent out for the new hot water heater for the kitchen. And I discovered that the floorboards of this church are 2x12s. And they're not 1.5-inch thick 2x12s that are really 1.5 inch by 11.5. These suckers are a full 2 inches thick. And they're a full 12 inches wide. And they're old hard wood. I started sawing and I was going out and I went in and told Dan and Paul, I said, I'm going to get a new sawzall blade. That stuff's hard. Now, it's nice when you know what that's there that you can sit here and be in comfort that you're not going to fall into the basement, right? But how many of you think about the floor when you walk on it? You realize there's a big hole underneath of here with concrete, right? But do you walk on it and worry about falling through the floor? You trust it, don't you? It's the same way. I got in my car and started coming this way. And when I back out of the garage, I have squeaky brakes. You know, and so I think about my brakes. But most of the time when I'm driving, do you think about the brakes in your car? No. You just trust when you push the pedal, whoever manufactured it, they're going to work, don't you? That's the way faith with God is. You put your trust in it, believing it's going to work, like the floorboards, like your brake pedal, and you trust that. That's what you do with God. That helps your faith. Now, be on your outline. By noticing how God fulfilled His promises in the past, we can develop strong confidence in the future. But most of us go through life and don't notice all the things that God does. Now, He promises to never leave you and forsake you. As you read Joshua chapter 1, it's really cool. God says, now, Joshua, here's what I want you to do. Be strong and courageous. I'll never leave you and forsake you. So here's your part. You be strong and courageous. Here's my part. I will never leave you and forsake you. And wherever you go, whatever you set your foot on, I will give you victory in that place. Thank you, sir. He punctuated that one quite well, didn't he? You got to notice what God's doing. Actually, sometimes in the Bible when God speaks, people thought, was that God speaking or was that thunder? His voice is like that. So you got to pay attention to the thunder because sometimes it may be God talking to you. So here is point number 5. He was successful. A, God's work done God's way will bring success. When you're doing God's work, you have to do it God's way. Now, where are you going to learn that? If you go to Kansas University, are they going to teach you that? Go to Iowa University, are they going to teach you God's work, God's way? No. I was pleased with some of the stands that some of the coaching staff of BYU, Brigham Young University, took as far as morality and purity in their players and took a stand. That's amazing to be watching college football and know that one of the star players is sitting there on a shirt and tie because of standards of morality that they have at that university. If you break the standards, you don't play. That is something I wish more universities would do in our country. I wish, again, our major universities that were at one time were Bible institutes of learning, and you learn God's truths, God's way. Most of the East Coast schools were all godly schools at one time. Now they're moral. Anyway, God's work done God's way, that's another sermon, will bring success. Joshua and his army moved through the country, city to city, and they cleansed the land of wickedness. They destroyed every trace of idol worship. Dan and I were talking the other day. It's hard for me to read that when they went into these cities, they killed everything. They killed everybody. There wasn't a man, woman, child, animal left alive. And anything that wouldn't withstand the fire, gold, silver, diamonds, they burned it up. They destroyed all of the traces of idol worship. Now, in our lives, conflict with evil is inevitable. We should be as merciless as Israel in destroying sin in our life. You can't let a little bit of it hang out and not corrupt everything. We have to be ruthless with dealing with sin in our life, like Joshua and his army was in dealing with the idol worship in those places. So, be on your outline. The last point to fill in is not. The standard for success, however, is not set by our society around us, but by God's Word. There's a large church in California called Saddleback that's getting a lot of flack from a lot of Christians because they have taken and substituted secular values and marketing principles into their discipleship programs rather than biblical truths. And they had some real success with developing and discipling people, but now they're changing from God's ways to the world's ways. And when you do that, it's not going to give you the same success. You can't substitute the ways of the world for the ways of God in a church leadership or in your personal life. You have to study the Scriptures. How does this impact me? What can I learn from their lives? How is this going to affect me so I don't make the same mistakes? These men have these strengths in their lives. So, Joshua's life. What did we learn? Not what can we learn, what did we learn? First of all, if we're being discipled, if we're being submissive, if we're being more obedient, if we're becoming more faithful, then we are successful. Success comes from being faithful, obedient, submissive, discipled children of God. That's where success comes from. And you can see that in Joshua's life as you read it through. So in Deuteronomy 31, 7 and 8, it says, "Then Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the presence of all Israel, 'Be strong and courageous. The Lord himself goes before you, and he will be with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged.'" So here's what God's saying. Be strong and be courageous. Don't be afraid. Don't get discouraged. Now, I tend to relate more to that bottom line. I get afraid and I get discouraged. That's not biblical. That's not godly. What I need to do is be strong and courageous. So, here's my conclusion. What can we learn? Joshua urged the Israelites to continue to follow the Lord and worship Him alone. That's what I'm going to try to do with you. I'm going to urge you to continue to follow the Lord and worship Him alone, not the idols that the rest of our culture does. Even though we may have experiences with God at work in our lives, we too must continually renew our commitment to obey Him above all other authority and worship Him alone. Many of us have seen God work in our lives in the past. And like I confess to you, had biblical patterns in our life that we have forsaken. We need to get back to discipling people to replace us. We need to get back to being submissive. We need to get back to being immediately available and obedient. The first time God says it, that will create faithfulness in us and will have personal success. If you live life that way, when you die and you meet the Lord, you will have no fear of what He's going to say. Because they'll say, "Good job. Well done. You were a faithful servant." But if we don't do this with our homes, with our communities, with our churches, with our country, it's not going to be so pretty. Pray with me. Heavenly Father, we bow before You right now, and we are very thankful for the grace, the forgiveness that Your Son provided for us. Because quite frankly, we need it. We mess up. We need your grace. We need your forgiveness. We need your regenerating power to create in us strong and courageous hearts so that we would be faithful. We wouldn't be discouraged. We wouldn't be afraid. We would be ones who are willing to open our lives to others and disciple. We would be willing to be open in our lives and be submissive to you and to the other entities that we're involved with government and husbands and wives. We thank you for that. Create in us the clean hearts that we need. Give us the success, your success, not the world's. We ask it all in Jesus' name. Amen.